You're listening to the Scott Thompson Show podcast on 900 CHML.
We're going to talk about science because there's a lot of chatter about science, especially in regard to climate change and you know, all the information that's been floating around now that the campaign has started, the election campaign has started. Lots of chatter in and around the science of climate change and such. But a new poll is suggesting that trust in science is falling amongst Canadians. This is scary because I've often thought that, you know, science kind of trumps everything as far as your personal belief, religious beliefs, what have you. I mean, science is science. It's based on data. You do experiments, it's either this way or that way. You know, I mean, it's not opinion. There's theory. But once something's proven, it's pretty much proven. A survey suggests that the trust that Canadians place in science is eroded. Which seems odd. Because we should be getting smarter. Should we not? A survey by Ipsos, this is for the 3M company, multinational company, found that nearly half of those surveyed thought scientists are elitist and that a significant number of respondents discounted findings that don't accord with their personal beliefs. And this is Richard Chartrand of 3M. He says, while science skeptics represented the minority of Canadians, the number is increasing. This trend is concerning. Goes on to say there are certainly misconceptions. You can't blame people. It's just a jungle of misinformation out there. To talk more about all of this and how we can hopefully change this trend, let's bring in Murdad Harari, CEO and President, Canadian Science Policy Conference, a nonprofit and advocacy group, and on the line with us now. Murdad, thanks for the time. Much appreciated.
Not at all. It's a pleasure to be here. Just one correction that we are not an advocacy group. We are just a convener.
Okay. Explain to us what the Canadian Science Policy Conference is.
So it's Canadian Science Policy Center, in fact, that we have an annual conference on bringing together various stakeholders of science and innovation enterprises in Canada from across country, across disciplines and across sectors to discuss the emerging and important issues of science and innovation when it comes to policy and society. So we are the contact point and point of reference for government, for a private sector, for academia, and for nonprofit organizations who operate in the area of science and innovation to discuss the policy issues.
Your thoughts on this survey, what does this survey tell you?
Well, it concerns me that we have seen this trend over the course of past few years, that the public is becoming more distant to the scientific community and scientific findings and seeing these findings with more skeptical lenses. And that's not a good sign. And I think scientific community as a whole should take responsibility and act better in terms of connecting with the public as well as other organizations and civil society in order to promote science and not just that, to position science in a way that science is not an opinion, is not public belief. It's a process that tries to understand the nature and the world around us, and its findings are not just personal opinion, and it's not impacted by government or other organizations.
You know, in my introduction, I said that. I mean, I remember as a kid, I mean, science was science. It didn't matter what your personal belief was, religion, what have you. This was data that is presented, and either it's this or it's that. Why is this happening? Why is this just science failing to sell itself?
First of all, I do not have the full-fledged answer for you that why this is happening. But one thing that I say that the number of factors that contribute to this is, in fact, that there are many voices around us on a daily basis. If before was just a university and that university was a stature in our life and everybody used to respect that, nowadays things have changed. There are many more organizations from all sectors, even from the religious organizations, civil society, governmental, and more importantly, the expansion of social media. So there are thousands of contributors to our daily life, and we hear from many of them. If you open your Twitter account, you see messages from thousands of individuals from across layers of society. So it's not just one voice. Therefore, you are exposed to so many opinions. And I think by default, takes the university or science voice as one of the others. And I think we have lost, and scientific community, again, should take responsibility for that, lost that distinction that science is not an opinion as the others.
I've often had this discussion with people around religion, and I certainly don't want to go there in this discussion, but obviously technology has played a huge part in this. Do we think because we have access to certain information that we can find these answers out ourselves?
I think part of it, yes, as I said, the expansion of social media, which provides numerous and much more information more accessible than before, that could be one contributor factor to this.
So how, as a society, how do we tell the difference between real science and those commercial entities that are using bits and pieces of science to sell their agenda?
Yeah, it's very difficult, to be quite honest, because they also have, you know, the tools and to get their point and their message to the public. I think the public should be more aware about the science and the process of science and the findings of science. One of the things that scientific community, due to complexity, of course, and due to the nature of science, has not been so successful in conveying the scientific findings to the public through various media or means of communications that they have. As I said, part of it is just because of the complexity of science and scientific process. But however, it is a must to do for scientific community to be able to get their message across the public. It is, in fact, it's becoming a long overdue. I must say that the scientific community, they have not sat on their ivory tower like before and just do nothing. That's not the case. We have to give them the credit that they have tried. Also, they have tried through, you know, engaging with the public through various other affiliated organizations with scientific community, through various media and various means, various social media. However, it seems that this is not enough, and we have to do more.
So now we're expecting the role of scientists not to just figure all of this out, but now be able to explain it to us in layman terms before industry gets a hold of it and tries to distort the facts in their favor.
That's part of it. So science enterprises, like others, they have to have their mechanisms to be able to communicate to public in the right way and in an effective way. Therefore, it's not necessarily that the responsibility of one scientist per se. It is the responsibility of the community to have means and tools of communication with the public in a way that is understandable for everyone. That means that science communicators have become very important in this time and age.
I would agree with that, because at the end of the day, when people are bombarded with all of this information, which scientists do they believe? And you can look to things like the opioid crisis, where science may say this, and then other people will say science says that. You can look to climate change, where you get people distorting facts one way or the other. And again, I'm not denying any of that. So how is the public to know which science or what scientists to believe?
Right. I think part of it also is the role and responsibility of media, like, you know, yourself in this case, to some due diligence and due research beforehand. For example, the weight that in terms of climate change, for example, in scientific community, the climate change science, the scientists expert in climate and environmental science, who believe the climate change is not happening or is not man-made, you can count your, it's less than, you know, number of fingers, right? So the absolute majority, 99% of scientists, they think and they believe that climate change is happening, and it's man-made, right? It's a result of the human being activities. So my point is, do not give the equal weight to those climate change deniers, who they have right of obviously to express their opinion. There is no question about that. But my point is that we have to have a kind of a fair discussion and give the appropriate weight to the true science. And part of it, I guess, is the media responsibility.
So are we going to see changes in how science presents this to the public?
I think the scientific community is trying. I believe that they have to do more. And given the change in our society, as I said, the expansion of social media and many other things, and I think they have to try to get ahead of curve. And part of it is their relationship with media, such as yourself. That's also part of the things that they have to bear in mind.
Mehrdad Hariri has been with us, CEO and President of the Canadian Science Policy Conference. Mehrdad, thank you so much for the time and insight. Much appreciated.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, let's bring in Dr. Don Bowdish, an associate professor at McMaster University, Canadian Research Chair in Aging and Immunity, and is on the line with us now. Don, thanks for the time. Much appreciated.
Thanks so much for having me.
Don, what are your thoughts on this survey that society is starting to question science and scientists and positioning them as elite and such? Obviously, you must find this disturbing. Why do you think it's happening?
Well, it's very disturbing and upsetting for all of us. Most of us who became scientists came because we want to help contribute to the greater good. We want to make the world a better place. And the term, you know, the belief that it's an elitist field is particularly upsetting because science has always been a field that's attracted people from all walks of life, all economic backgrounds. But I think the challenge is, as we get more and more trained in our particular field, we become less and less able to relate and to talk about the big picture. We're so taught to be precise and accurate that we lose our ability to remember what's jargon and not jargon and to communicate that fairly. I think one of the other challenges is that it's hard to do many things well. It's hard to be an excellent scientist and also an excellent communicator. And we used to rely on specialized science reporters or science writers who would convey a lot of that work for us through the media. But as media changes, we have fewer of these people who are specialized, and so now we're relying on the scientists themselves to do a lot of that communication.
Has talk about technology and, as the previous guest said, just a jungle of technology and information coming at people. Do we now assume we can do this ourselves?
Absolutely. Who hasn't turned to Dr. Wikipedia or Dr. Google to try to self-diagnose? Because there's a lot of information out there, we all think that we are smart enough to be able to weave our way through all that complicated information. But the challenge is it's not all equal. And just because it shows up on the first page of Google doesn't mean it's the best data. And understanding what kind of clinical trial is more reliable or understanding what sort of biases might be in a specific study is really challenging for people who don't have all that training and expertise. It takes those of us who are in science decades to become experts in our fields, and it's challenging for even scientists to understand a different field, let alone the lay public.
So in a world where we have access to pretty much everything, how does society know what science to believe, which scientists to believe? As you often see, especially in politics where there's an agenda or industry where there's an agenda, that they can find science that backs them up. So it seems that we're debating science when, in fact, science should be, at the end of the day, the final proof, shouldn't it?
It should be. I think I have some hope that a lot of our public education system is doing a really good job of teaching media literacy. So looking at what the source is. So, for example, does that source come from a national funding body where it's probably a fairly impartial? Do the scientists declare any conflicts of interest they might have to see if they're being funded from, say, an industrial source? Those are helpful. Understanding that in science, repetition is good. So one finding, we all approach with hesitation until it's been reproduced across the world. Big studies are more reliable than small studies. But these, again, are all things that are really challenging for people to understand. And science really is based on repetition. So we only become confident when people can do the same thing over and over again. But unfortunately, repetition is not particularly exciting, so it's not reported on very much. So I have to have faith that we are going to teach the next generation to be a lot more literate about the media and about the sources where they get their information, and to try to teach people that there are impartial sources. So, for example, public health agencies are a great resource because they are impartial in looking at the data.
I remember having a discussion with friends in regard to the creation of Earth and mankind and how it all started and how we all got here. And you know what those conversations can be like. And I remember somebody who had a very religious point of view saying, well, that's just a worldview. And I remember thinking, well, no, science isn't a worldview. Science is something different based in fact. Am I close there?
Yes. Well, I mean, there's a famous a quote from Einstein about, and I'll get it exactly, I'll get it wrong, but about how now we now value someone's opinion as much as someone else's fact.
How and has I, that happened?
Well, I think to a certain degree, we all have what's called confirmation bias. We tend to believe things that confirm what we already believe.
Yeah.
So, and we tend to ignore things that challenge us. And that's a really hard bias to get over. So I think one of the things that's challenging is when you're presented with information that is not consistent with what you believe. If I say vaccines are good and you believe them to be bad, you're more likely to discount my view.
There's a great example how this happens. Vaccination. I always also said the opioid crisis or
or
climate change. You're hearing both sides of this
that's
issue.
Right. And as someone who speaks a lot about vaccination, I can tell you that it's really, really hard for people to accept any challenge to their beliefs. But I think the way we need to do this is we have to communicate not so much with just numbers and try to wow people with facts, but really listen to what their concerns are and then address those specific concerns, because everyone's trying to make the right decision. Everyone's trying to make the best decision, and we just all have a different pool of facts that we can draw from. And as scientists, we have to be humble, and we have to listen before we speak.
So is it too much information? Is that how we got here?
I think to a certain point. I mean, I think with the democratization of all that information.
At one time, we only would get this information from sitting in a class with you. Now everybody is getting this.
That's exactly right. But I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I do believe that knowledge is power. So I think the question is, how do we teach people how to pick what is a good source versus a bad source? And again, I think, you know, relying on impartial public health agencies, for example, if you're looking for health information, and understanding who funds what. So as an example, I do research on vaccination. And someone once said to me, are you in the pockets of Big Pharma? And I'm a university professor, so I'm actually in the pockets of Big Taxpayer. And as the consequence, you know,
But you can understand how people said that
absolutely.
To you, especially thinking, well, we put all our trust in Big Pharma, and look where it's gotten us with the opioid crisis.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So understanding where the funding stream, where you get your money from, is actually very, very important, because it helps color people's perceptions about whether you're impartial or not. And so being upfront about that, about how the work is paid for, I think it's really, really key to helping build some of that trust.
So how do you turn this around? Because it seems like we're heading for a train wreck here. It seems like this is only growing.
I worry. I do worry. But I would say that institutions like McMaster, where I'm at, are starting to really think about training people not just on how they do the science, but how they communicate their science. And so I'm hopeful that the next generation of young scientists will be incredibly media savvy. Mm. And because there's this democratization, they can use social media and they can use other Facebook, whatever they're on, to sort of communicate their science. And I think that will help break down the belief that scientists are elitists, because you'll know that your neighbor, your cousin, your friends are scientists. Mm. And I have faith that as we train the next generation of students to learn how to be critical of the media and scientists of how to use and work with the media, I think we'll be in a better place.
Dr. Don Bowdish has been with us, an associate professor at McMaster University and a Canada Research Chair in Aging and Immunity. Don, thanks so much for the time and insight. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Scott Thompson Show podcast on 900 CHML.